Tragedy at the state fair. Was it unavoidable? Phil Hinkle hangs on. The mayor of Carmel hires a private eye, and Herman Cain brings his presidential campaign to Indiana. That plus the Sugar Land tribute to the state fair victims and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending August 19, 2011.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, a tragic stage collapse at the state fair killed six people and injured dozens. In the aftermath, as many as five investigations are underway. We already know fair officials did not follow all the steps of their own severe weather policy on the night of the concert by the country group Sugarland. According to Indiana State Police, Sugarland fans were told 4 minutes before the collapse that severe weather was moving into the area, but the words severe thunderstorm warning were never mentioned. According to the fair's own policy, they should have been.
That there was the severe thunderstorm warning issued, yeah. That wasn't said in that statement. That's right.
And is that a problem then?
Well, it doesn't follow the to-the-T protocol, yeah.
Was the state fair tragedy preventable? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, did the state fair handle this situation poorly?
Well, I think that's what the investigation is designed to tell, the independent investigation that the governor just announced here. I mean, obviously it's a tragedy. Nobody at the state fair ever envisioned that this would happen, and it's made such great progress over the last few years. It's really very, very unfortunate. Having said all of that, you know, there is no statute that requires that stage be inspected. If that stage were across the street on a different piece of ground, it would have to go through an inspection process and be certified as okay. That's something I'm sure that's going to be rectified at the next legislative session. And then in terms of the procedures they followed, I think that's what the inquiry is going to have to do, because your first question was it preventable? Regardless of whether the stage was safe, if evacuation had occurred, it would have collapsed on no one. So obviously it was preventable. The question is, was it foreseeable? And were the right steps taken? And that's what I think the independent inquiry is going to have to show.
And one of the things we're learning at this point is that First Lady Sherry Daniels was there. There was a trooper there protecting her, as there always is, and he advised her to leave. Is it fair to say that others there should get the same advice that the First Lady gets?
Well, I don't know about whether you can make that comparison or not. I mean, there were a lot of adults who heard the words that there were storms brewing, and people who were there that I've talked to said all you had to do was look out ahead of it and you could see it coming. And a lot of people left the grandstands before the tragedy took place. But Ann's right. This is a terrible situation. Nobody could foresee this. And it's one of those where the independent investigations will run its course. And I think you'll see all kind of changes made, both procedurally and with state law, with lawmakers looking at things like the structure. But I think it's important. The governor wants to get to the bottom of it, and by hiring the two national, highly respected national firms to investigate not only the structure, but the procedures is very important. And once that information's out, then we can go forward.
The governor started out saying that this was freakish. And then by Wednesday had ordered the second of these investigations. Did his tone change, or was he just approaching this in a different fashion as the week went on?
Well, I mean, it was freakish. I mean, to echo what has been said, yes, maybe the evacuation could have been expedited or the word could have gotten out. But again, it's not as if anybody intentionally encouraged people to stay. So it's, from that standpoint, it's an unfortunate, tragic scenario, as the governor said. His tone, I think, don't know about the tone, but I mean the addition of other investigations, I think, makes sense and was prompted by a lot of the suggestions that were made by those who had looked at what had happened around the country, other tragedies, the Texas A&M bonfire collapse, which in the late 90s killed some folks, other tragedies, mine disasters. You could point to a number of sorts of things where the key has been get to the bottom of these situations by bringing in outside experts where there's no even question that there's any kind of improper influence of how the decisions, the results come out. And that's what I think ultimately needed to happen here, and that's what we saw certainly by the end of the week.
How quickly do we need answers?
I hope it moves expeditiously. You really don't know because it's a large area and there were a lot of people involved. And you have several agencies taking part in this investigation, so it'll take a while. I think that's a reasonable expectation, but I hope it doesn't go 6 months, say. I hope they can get this fairly expeditiously, be able to digest the reports in time for the legislature to be able to deal with it and for everyone else to be able to deal with it, and hopefully put it behind as an experience.
So you're saying the legislature can take it up in January?
Right, so that people can learn what they need to learn from this and then move forward, because it's a horrible situation, and no one wants to have to deal with it, but the sooner they can deal with it and the sooner we can find out what needs to be done, then the better.
Of course, right. The investigations will not be the only spotlight that shines on this. I'm sure, it's a given that we'll see litigation arising.
The first lawsuit was filed today.
Exactly, and I think that's a given. We will see, that's almost, if you will, another kind of another layer of this investigation as people are deposed and as the discovery process takes place through the filing and the discovery process of those lawsuits. This will be around for a while.
You'll have all of that, but what you'll have, it seems to me, if you do have a proper independent investigation, are suggestions so that going forward right. It never happens again. There has to be a clear chain of command at these events as to who literally evacuates and when and what the standards are, and then the inspection. It seems to me, I mean, that's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
That ought to be done.
And the bottom line here is that unfortunately this is the fourth in a string of five now tragedies
right.
like this, and it's probably going to be what everybody looks to try to make these things more safe in the future.
Well, that would be a good thing.
We may see a big change in the way these shows are staged.
And as far as the freakish nature of this, as the governor pointed to after the tragedy, I mean, when you think about, not another thing was damaged on the entire state fairgrounds, including the rides at the end of the midway, which weren't 300 yards away. None of that was damaged. And even the tent next to the stage wasn't even damaged. I mean, this was,
it was a wind gust. It was a wind gust 12 miles in advance of a thunderstorm.
Right. And so, can you predict that? Can you predict that? That's very hard to do, and that's the question.
You may not be able to predict where it's going to hit, but Hendricks County did have reported gusts of wind of 77 miles an hour beforehand, and we knew it was coming east. So then the question is, do you know it's going to hit that? No. It could have hit the Ferris wheel. It could have hit any number of things. But you need to have
better
a clear-cut idea of what happens when you have that kind of warning.
All right, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, will the investigations get to the bottom of the state fair tragedy? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, more public pressure is necessary. Last week's question was, do you pay attention to political ads? 46% said yes, 42% said no, 12% said only the negative ones. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. There was no news on the Phil Hinkle front this week, and that in itself is news. The GOP state representative, who last week was the subject of a Craigslist scandal involving a teenage boy who said Hinkle paid him, quote, for a really good time, has made no public comments. Neither have legislative leaders, and so far Hinkle continues to hold his seat in the Indiana House of Representatives. Mike McDaniel, can Phil Hinkle ride out this storm?
Well, I said last week I didn't think he could. I think the reason you didn't have any comments this week was out of respect for the tragic events that happened at the fairgrounds. I don't think anybody wanted to come out and be talking about this week. And I also think legislative leadership needed time to talk amongst themselves and with Representative Hinkle. And I know Speaker Bosma has talked to legislative leadership. I'm pretty sure he's talked to Phil Hinkle. And I would look for some statements coming out next week.
certainly if you're Phil Hinkle and you're caught in this scandal, this tragedy happens and it takes away all the headlines. On the one hand, that might be a good opportunity to hand in your resignation and get out without being bothered.
But right? I don't think that's the way he's going. I mean, the day after the scandal broke, he showed up for a committee hearing and participated in the committee hearing. I think his intention is to ride it out no matter what the legislative leadership says, and I think his answer to that is to say what some other people in this situation have said, and that is let the voters decide. But, I mean, if what you were looking for was to be able to put that resignation in without a huge story, obviously that time has come and gone. And the fact that he showed up for the hearing on that committee that no one expected to see him there the next day, I think is an indication of which way he's going.
Can he perform his job?
I think the answer is yes, but the public views him very differently now than they viewed him before. I think it makes it much more difficult. I think Ann's answer is exactly the sentiment that people have. They were surprised that he was there because of the embarrassing nature of the situation. So he can continue to do his job, but it's much more difficult, and it'll be interesting to see if he does decide to run for re-election what the response of the electorate is.
Okay, so if he decides to continue reporting for work, he's a committee chairman. Should leadership take that away from him?
It wouldn't be surprising, I suppose, that they would make that statement, send that message, if you will, because you're right, they can't actually force him out of office. They could, in fact, force him out of the chairman's seat.
All right, here's another question. Regardless of his intentions, does he owe the public a statement of some kind at this point? We're now a week after the disclosure here. We don't have anything from his side.
What do you say?
You either say it's not true or you apologize in some
fashion.
I
think he owes his constituents a statement.
Yeah.
At the very least, and he's got to decide what that's going to be. And I think the statement's got to be what he's going to do. Is he going to try to, as Ann said, ride it out, or is he going to resign? I mean, we need to hear from him sometime soon, I would think.
We should have heard from him by now, shouldn't we?
Well, I mean, I can understand in his circumstance wanting to get away from town for a while and try to collect yourself and your thoughts and think this thing through. I mean, it's only been, a week?
And you have this tragedy in between.
Sure.
I mean, the idea that he would come out with some statement in the middle of this would seem to me to be incredibly insensitive.
Right.
So the delay doesn't mean anything. And frankly, you know, Carl Brizzi rode that out, okay? And the allegations regarding...
I think this is different.
This is more prurient, obviously.
Right.
But what Carl Brizzi was accused of, it seemed to me, had much more bearing on what Carl Brizzi's job was, which makes it more worrisome from the voters. And look at Charlie White.
We're going to get to that a little later in the show.
Well, but I mean, the point is...
That's a legal situation.
I think John's right. I think he could ride out his term. Clearly, legally, he could. Nobody can... To your point, the chairmanship could be taken away, but not his seat in the General Assembly. So he's been shown to be a fighter. He may try to stick around. Now, the difference about the ability to function probably depends on the issue he's dealing with. If it's a local government issue, which is something on which he has focused a lot, there's some issue. But then you get some of the morals issues or the social issues that are such high-profile issues.
No matter what
his position is on those, you're going to have people on both sides trying to turn that into either an example of hypocrisy or read something into it. That's
in the meantime, we've talked here many times about how a politician, when they become a punchline, it can no longer be effective. Conan O'Brien did a joke about Phil Hinkle this week that was rated on a website as one of the top 10 funniest jokes on late night TV that night.
If Phil Hinkle decides he wants to stay in office, then he better come back with an explanation of why he wants to stay in office and what he's going to do, because he cannot stay silent and remain in office. Otherwise, he does need to.
Well, this is stating the obvious, but even if he decides to fight and stay and convinces people to support him in the short term, given what we've seen from the Marion County Republican chairman, who has called for his resignation from the state level, where they've been a little more cautious in their wording, but the message remains the same.
Yeah.
The guarantee he wouldn't get slated, guaranteed he probably would face a primary opponent.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean he can't ride out his term.
No, but I'm saying there's a difference between riding out your term and trying to stay in the General Assembly long term.
All right, still on the category of sex scandals. Carmel Mayor Jim Brainerd said this week the misuse of taxpayer funds and an affair may have led to the abrupt resignation of the head of Carmel's new Center for the Performing Arts. The mayor says Steve Libman was in charge of hundreds of millions of dollars in city assets while running the new Center for Performing Arts that includes the Palladium. Invoices from private investigators came out after his sudden resignation. The bill for those services, more than $8,000, has Carmel City councilors challenging the bill. Earlier this week, some council members were skeptical about the need for an investigation, and Mayor Brainerd said he was just trying to protect the taxpayers.
My personal opinion is that Mr. Libman is a political target. I think that the independence with which he operated the foundation did not sit well. I have said before that in discussions that we've had with members of the board of directors of the foundation, every indication was that the work that Mr. Libman did was first rate in every respect.
The city attorney and the city both have an affirmative duty to look out for the city's interest in cases where there could be potential litigation.
As Mayor Brainerd, preceded by Rick Sharp, who's on the city council in Carmel, John Ketzenberger, did the mayor handle this well?
You know, I think it's a little disturbing when you have a official of the government there being investigated by a private investigator for, you know, the situation that occurred here. And it's not the cost, it's the notion behind that. You know, the assertion that he shouldn't have used the police or some other agency, okay, I understand that too. But there are other ways to conduct an investigation, to get to the bottom of what you have heard as allegations of misconduct, and to take care of that matter before you hire a public investigator, private investigator. Secondly, it's not handled well because he didn't let anybody know about this private investigator, and it lingered out there for more than a week. I think that Mayor Brainerd has opened himself to charges that this is a political situation by the way he handled this, and I think that's unfortunate.
I think that's a very accurate assessment on the both accounts that John made. Either the Center for Performing Arts and the foundation that runs it, either it's attached at the hip to the city or it's not. So on the one hand, you have the mayor seemingly arguing that I had to do this because as the mayor of this municipality, I'm protecting taxpayers who may be at risk because of this. He's suggesting, it seems to me, or at least I'm inferring, that this is a public entity. And yet when news organizations, including I think Jim, yeah, your own, have filed public record requests for travel records and whatnot from the Performing Arts Center this week, they were told, well, no, we don't have to provide those, right, because we're not a public entity. So if you got to have it, either you are or,
yeah,
you aren't.
Pick
and,
one.
And pick one, because you can't ride the both sides of that rail.
Not unusual for Brainerd to be at odds with the city council in the meantime.
No, but look, if you were catching the heat and have caught the heat that Jim Brainerd has over the building of this facility to start with, and you are concerned that there are taxpayer dollars at risk, you're going to do whatever you can to get to the bottom of it, because he has taken some major hits,
sure,
over this, over the process of putting this thing together. And with his reelection up this year, you know, last thing he wants is to have a big scandal hit right before the election that have to do with the running of this operation. So, you know, I'm not surprised at all that he would hire this guy. And for $8,000, if they got to the bottom of it, I think they came out ahead of the game.
Outsourcing investigations.
You know, the moral of this story is you better not run afoul of Jim Brainerd. I mean, I'd like to think that what he was really concerned about was an EEO claim, but I don't think so. I think he was settling a political score here. And I think it's worrisome. I think John's right about that. If you think there's an EEO violation, having investigated any number of these myself, there's an easy way to do it, and you've got a city attorney who can handle it. You don't have to follow somebody like that. That seems to me it strikes of score settling, and I think that's very, very worrisome.
GOP presidential candidate Herman Cain campaigned in Indianapolis this week. Cain graduated from Purdue and used to run Godfather's Pizza. He took the stage in front of about 500 people at the Columbia Club. But why he came to Indiana so far in advance of the May primary, who knows?
This nomination process is going to go all the way to June. We happen to believe that. And we started recognizing that possibility long before now. So that makes Indiana just as important as some of these other states.
John Schwannis, is he wasting his time in Indiana right now?
Well, I thought the question was going to be, why is he coming so soon to Indiana? And I would say it's the only time he probably has the opportunity, because he won't be around closer to the primary. Politico and others who watch these things very closely had a piece in just this week that suggested his campaign organization was floundering. Sure, he's energized some crowds. He got a great warm response from a pretty good-sized crowd here in Indianapolis. But if you look at the campaign as a whole, what he tried to do in Ames, Iowa at the straw poll, he finished a distant fifth, and he says that's good because he wasn't as active in organizing his troops at the ground level, but that's also a detriment. He wasn't as active as organizing his troops. He doesn't have the grassroots organization that could deliver the kind of success long-term that a successful candidate for the nomination would need.
Now, word comes this week that John Huntsman has accepted an invitation to come to Indiana from Eric Holcomb, the state Republican chairman. Is this a good way to figure out who's at the bottom of the GOP
wow.
field?
Poor Eric. He was just here a couple of weeks ago.
Well, good for Eric.
You treated him poorly.
But you know,
when you look at who's accepting his invitation, it's not Mitt Romney.
Well, but
it's
not
Michelle Bachmann.
Okay, it may be not yet, but I'll give Eric credit for deciding that, hey, you want to get him in town, bring him to town. And, you know, who knows what's next? So go for it.
I'll tell you what's next. Reince Priebus.
If he can say the name when he introduces him.
I don't think I got it right. It's Reince Priebus, right?
The
national GOP chairman's coming to town next week to talk about how important Indiana is.
Well, there you go. And it is important. And you know what else?
What?
Obama is going to contest Indiana again.
You think so?
I think he is, actually.
You disagree with the Obama advisors who talked to the New York Times?
I think you're going to find him contesting Indiana. I think you're going to see appearances by him in Indiana, and you're going to see a grassroots movement, too. So there.
Well, I think we're going to see some campaign staff, and we're going to see a grassroots movement, because he's going to have $1 billion.
I bet you he'll be here.
It's on his way to Chicago.
It's on everybody else's way to Chicago, and John Kane couldn't make it.
Yeah. He couldn't find Chicago.
Well, but McCain, you know, the Democrats, we had literally hundreds of campaign appearances, over 100 campaign appearances in 2008 from Democrats running for president. We had two from a Republican, right? Republicans are turning out for guys like Herman Cain just because they've never touched a presidential candidate.
First of all, it irritates me. It irritates me that you dismiss these people out of hand the way you do. Herman Cain is a highly successful businessman, Purdue graduate. He's running for president. He's put his name on the line. He's willing to go out and campaign for.
And he has
office.
As much chance of the nomination
as look,
you do.
Look, and he may not be there at the end of this thing because he doesn't have the resources or the name ID to get him there. But he's out doing it, okay? And I give Holcomb credit for inviting all these guys.
Oh, I do too.
Huntsman's next.
Sure. Right.
Romney will be here in September. Thank you. He'll be next. You'll get them all here before it's over, because Indiana may still be in play for this nomination, because there are so many candidates. And if there's not a front runner by then, you may be still working this thing in May.
I agree with you about Holcomb.
And you're going to get all here.
I give him credit as well for bringing these people here.
It's a good thing.
We're not kicking him in the shins. The only person who kicked
him
in the shins.
Jim did.
The only person who did was the candidate himself, who got up there and endorsed Richard Murdoch in the Senate campaign.
And I'm sure that was not necessarily
what Eric Holcomb, even though he's Switzerland in this,
probably
didn't want to hear
that. It's hard to run for president of the United States. I give anybody credit that will go out and do that.
I agree.
And it's very difficult.
And then you wonder about his judgment, because he's a Tea Party groupie
Mike McDaniel
who votes
for president.
For Murdoch.
I agree.
Right.
McDaniel for president.
There you go.
Moving on. Charlie White won another delay this week in his trial on criminal charges that include voter fraud. The embattled Republican Secretary of State was originally scheduled to stand trial this week, but won a delay till September. Now the trial is off until the end of January. White's new attorney, Carl Brizzi, told a judge that he needs more time to prepare. Brizzi joined the defense team in early August. Ann Delaney, is justice delayed, justice denied?
It's not uncommon for people to change attorneys to get a continuance. But, you know, I've always wondered about Charlie White's judgment. But the idea that you would take the Voiles and Zahn firm and throw them over the side and hire Carl Brizzi to defend you in this case shows that he has no judgment.
Well, it might have something to do with an ability to pay, don't you think?
What, you think Brizzi's doing it for free?
I don't know. I'm guessing he's cheaper. He's just trying to establish a defense
practice. Well, you also get what you pay for, I guess.
The answer is the first sentence of her answer, which is, it's not uncommon for it continues to happen when you change attorneys. That's all this is. Sometimes what you see is what you get, and that's what this is.
And you don't think he's doing whatever he can to delay this?
No, I think he changed attorneys, and they wanted more time, and are getting more time.
We'll know that in January if he does it again.
Well, it's sort of like, what was it, you know, the stall and tactic in basketball. We're playing four corners being played right now.
All right, finally, we leave you with the tribute by Sugarland to the victims of the State Fair tragedy. The band resumed its tour this week in Albuquerque.
In honor of those people who were wounded and those beautiful lives that were lost, we ask you to stand and join us now in a moment of silence.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Week in Review under News. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in a thousand different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the thousand and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.